Today, we're looking at the costs, benefits, and challenges of creating a real living wage. In the late 1990s and early 2000s, San Francisco passed a variety of measures to help low-wage workers try to keep up with the rising cost of living. The city now has the highest minimum wage in the country at $10.74 an hour. It also requires employers to either provide health benefits or pay into a pool so the city can cover their health care costs. So how has this worked out for workers and their employers? Ken Jacobs has been studying those questions for over a decade. He's chair of the UC Berkeley Center for Labor Research and Education. Our reporter Todd Whitney invited Jacobs on a driving tour around some of San Francisco's restaurants to get an on-the-scene sense of wage issues. They started their journey at the south end of Mission Street.
What, if anything, would raising the minimum wage do to mitigate income inequality in America and in the Bay Area in particular?
So what's happened in this economy, as we've had such strong growth in income at the top, we've had stagnating and declining wages at the bottom. And the minimum wage does a very good job of reaching about the bottom 10% of the workforce. So overall, in the last 10 years since San Francisco's minimum wage law went into effect, we estimate over $1.2 billion have gone into the pockets of low-wage workers in San Francisco. One of the big questions was, what's it meant for employment? Whenever these laws are proposed, what you hear is, it'll be a job killer. And as it turns out, when you look in San Francisco, employment has grown about the same pace, a little bit faster than the rest of the Bay Area over this time period. And when you look at restaurant employment, it's actually grown faster. So there isn't any evidence of job loss as a result of these laws. And so then you ask yourself, okay, if we're not seeing a reduction in jobs, how are employers absorbing these costs? What is happening? What you do see is a notable decline in turnover. Workers are staying on the job longer. And you also see a small increase in price. Because the law applies to everybody, restaurants have raised their prices. So they went up 2.8%. So 2.8% increase in restaurant costs. So you're basically talking about a dime to a burrito, maybe a little bit more, somewhere in that range. So for a restaurant like that, it's a really small price increase for the customers, but it adds up to quite a bit for the workers and very meaningful for them in terms of their own ability to get by and survive in a city as expensive as this one.
All right. So we just pulled up to our first stop. We're at a little taqueria joint called Taqueria Menudo in the Excelsior District. I'm here with Ken Jacobs, head of the UC Berkeley Labor Center. And we're talking about what the impact of having the highest minimum wage in the country has had on San Francisco businesses like this one. So, Ken, what'd you find?
In limited service restaurants like this, we found an increase in worker tenure. People were staying on the job longer, and that saves money for restaurants as well in terms of hiring and recruiting costs, improves productivity and customer service. So they get some savings there. But the larger thing is they are absorbing it through a little bit higher prices. And so for the workers, it means a pretty substantial increase in terms of what they need to get through. We did see a small increase in prices. Again, restaurants raised their prices by about 2.8% compared to similar restaurants in Alameda County during the same time period. So you've got a small increase in price as a way to absorb the costs. Generally, also in limited service restaurants like this, we found an increase in worker tenure. People were staying on the job longer, and that saves money for restaurants as well in terms of hiring and recruiting costs.
All right, so you found that paying workers more at your average San Francisco burrito joint can actually work out better for employers in the long run. All right, so we're going to make some moves over to a different part of the Mission District, and we're going to see how restaurants over there compare. San Francisco is one of the first cities in America to institute a lot of these, raising the minimum wage and offering more benefits like sick leave to workers, to low-wage workers. What were some of the things that led San Francisco to do that in the first place?
Well, some of the same conditions we're seeing today. If we remember in the late 90s, rents were going up very highly and very quickly in San Francisco. Cost of living was high. We were seeing people being displaced. And so there was a lot of concern going on around the issues of low-wage work and people's ability to survive and support their families on what they earn. And that was also part of a movement that was happening across the United States as municipalities were taking into their own hands doing measures to improve wages and working conditions, given the lack of action on the federal level. So throughout the Bay Area and California, cities are looking at doing their own efforts to raise the minimum wage. Oakland has a proposal, Berkeley, Richmond, San Diego. So I think we're going to see quite a bit, quite a few cities looking at and doing some of the things that San Francisco has done.
All right, so we pulled up to a McDonald's at the corner of 24th and Mission. I'm here with King Jacobs, the head of the UC Berkeley Labor Center. We're going to head inside and talk about wage issues as they apply to fast food chains in the Bay Area. So, Ken, what exactly is the situation for people working your average fast food job?
If we look nationally at fast food restaurants, wages are so low that over 50% of fast food workers in America and their family members have to rely on one or more public assistance programs to make ends meet. So when we look at Medicaid, food stamps, the Earned Income Tax Credit, TANF, Temporary Aid for Needy Families, those programs are being widely used by fast food workers because that's the pay is so low that that's what they need to make it through the month. Because the pay is so low and people often work low hours, they don't earn enough to survive and support their families on their own. But when we looked at fast food workers, even those who work full-time in the United States, more than half of their families rely on some form of public assistance.
And what are the operating costs to go into your average restaurant in the Bay Area? First, a restaurant like a McDonald's. What would be the operating cost of a place like this?
So the operating cost, labor is going to be about a third of the costs. And then you have food, rent, and all the supplies and equipment. When we look at fast food restaurants, many of them are franchises. And so there's sort of two ways to look at this. Some of them can be owned by the corporation themselves. McDonald's has had incredible profits in recent years. There are some restaurants that are owned by investors or firms that own multiple franchises. And then there are some fast food restaurants that are owned by a single individual that's operating it like a small business. Now, any franchise owner, they have to pay, one of their biggest part of their operating costs is the franchise fee, which they pay to the corporation every month that allows them to be a McDonald's. They're also buying their supplies from the company. And the franchise owners, when the small franchise owners, are really squeezed in this operation. So their ability on their own to raise wages can be difficult because the corporation has an amount that it expects to be paid and required to be paid on a regular basis from the franchise owner. And where the real heavy profits are at the top on the level of the corporation. And the fast food industry nationally last year had $7 billion in profits, which is about the same as the $7 billion that we estimate fast food workers and their families used in public assistance.
And is there any sort of distinction between a limited service restaurant and a McDonald's when the business model in terms of being able to handle a hike in the minimum wage?
Well, again, when you look at something like McDonald's, there are different fast food restaurants come in different flavors in the sense of we've got some that are owned by the corporation themselves, some that are owned by large investment groups, and some that are owned by an individual owner. The ones that are owned by an individual owner really are much more like a small business, but they have less variability in terms of their ability to say, here, I'm going to change change sourcers for where I buy my food, or change what product, where I'm getting my napkins, or other kinds of things, because the rules are set from the top. And so ultimately, if we're going to see a big raise in wages in the fast food restaurants, McDonald's and the big companies are going to have to step up to the plate and deal with that in franchise fees. That said, In-N-Out Burger has always paid higher wages. That's built into their model. They do quite well. They're quite productive. Their workers earn a lot more, and they're making money. So you can do a fast food model that involves better wages than are paid in most fast food restaurants in the United States.
That's Ken Jacobs, head of the UC Berkeley Labor Center. And we're talking about the impact of raising pay for low-wage workers here in the Bay Area. All right, we're going to head back out. we've got one more kind of restaurant to consider. So now we've arrived at 18th and Guerrero. It's a neighborhood with lots of mid to high price restaurants, lots of boutique clothing shops, people whipping around on their fixies outside. So this part of the Mission, Ken, is definitely one of the trendiest in the city.
So when you stand in this part of the Mission, it's hard to remember that as late as 1989, the median wage in San Francisco was lower than the average for the state of California. We've seen tremendous change in San Francisco as more and more the tech industry boomed and more people with money have moved into the city. And so one of the big questions has been, as people do come into the city and have more money, there are service jobs created to serve those people, right? So the restaurant industry is one area that people patronize who work in the tech industry. And the big question is always, okay, if we've got these low-wage service jobs that are coming up to serve all the people who are coming in who have a bit more money, what do those jobs pay? And one of the important things about San Francisco's labor standards policies, the living wage law, health care law, paid sick leave, is to ensure that the new jobs that are being created actually are jobs that pay decent wages and provide people with the benefits they need.
So in your work with the UC Berkeley Labor Center, you've highlighted some of the restaurants that have really gone out of their way to do right by their workers. Can you tell us about some of those restaurants and what exactly it is that they're doing that makes them different?
Well, sure. So when San Francisco passed the Healthcare Security Ordinance, went into effect in 2007, and that requires businesses to meet a minimum spending standard for workers' health care. So there are restaurants like Zazie in Coal Valley that gave their full-time workers, Kaiser, good health plan. They're happy with it. The workers are happy with it. They found it's made a real difference. And in fact, there's been a whole series of issues here. When the law was passed, restaurants who didn't like it decided to put surcharges on their menus to tell everybody, hey, when you this extra 3% or 4% is paying for the health care requirement, which what happened was many of the diners were happy to do that. I don't mind paying a little more on my restaurant bill to know the worker has health care. But then it turned out some of those restaurants were just pocketing the money and weren't really giving it to the workers' health care. I want to emphasize, most businesses in San Francisco are providing workers good health benefits. And in fact, we saw a good uptick in workers with health benefits from their employer in San Francisco as a result of the law, even as it's been declining in the rest of the country. But there's always a few who try to figure out a way around it and get away with doing as little as possible.